Matter of Henry Kime versus Above All Termite and Pest Control. Can we please have appearances of counsel?
Good morning, Your Honor. Ann Hamill Paswa from Capehart and Scatcherd appearing on the appellant Above All Termite and Pest Control.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is April Gilmore. I'm with the Epstein Law Firm, and we represent the petitioner respondent, Henry Kime.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Richard Rubenstein. I'm here as amicus for the Council on Occupational Safety and Health.
Welcome, Council. Ms. Paswa.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I respectfully request 5 minutes reserved for rebuttal.
We'll have you back, perhaps for a little less than that. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. Since the 1979 amendments, the fundamental role in workers' compensation is that travel from one's home to the place of employment is not compensable. No published decision has ever departed from this rule. For an accident to be compensable under the New Jersey Workers' Compensation Act, it must arise out of and in the course of employment. Employment is defined by Section 36 of the statute. Section 36 was amended in 1979 to significantly reduce coverage for off-premises accidents. Before the amendment, the going and coming rule applied. This stood for the denial of accidents during routine travel from home to the employer's place of employment. Due to the kaleidoscope of judicially created exceptions, the legislator acted and amended the statute. The statute defines employment as deeming to commence when an employee arrives at the place of employment to report for work and shall terminate when the employee leaves the employer's place of employment. We have a fundamental rule in New Jersey under Section 36. It is called the employer's premises rule. When the employee is driving to the employer's place of employment, he is not covered. This rule has stood since 1979. Coverage attaches when the employee reaches the employer's place of employment. That is owned or controlled by the employer. That is why it's called the premises rule and is no longer called the going and coming rule. Mr. Kime's accident happened on the way to the employer's place of employment, but he was not yet on the premises. The purpose of the amendment to Section 36 in defining employment was to establish a bright line rule that employment begins when an employee arrives at the place of employment and ends when the employee leaves the place of employment, and to exclude areas not under the control of the employer. The amendments imposed upon off-site accidents a more restrictive standard of compensability. The remaining language in Section 36 addresses accidents where the employer required the employee to be away from the employer's place of employment. In such cases, there may be coverage under one of four exceptions. One, when the employee is engaged in the direct performance of duties assigned by the employer. Two, when the employee is paid travel time to and from a job site. Three, when the employee utilizes an employer-authorized vehicle traveling to and from a job site. The fourth is operation of a vehicle and business authorized by the employer. In the case at bar, Kime was not required by the employer to be away from his employer's place of employment. Rather, he was driving to the employer's place of employment when he was involved in the motor vehicle accident. Kime routinely went to the place of employment to pick up chemicals. The judge of compensation recognizes in controlling inquiry, was the employer requiring the employee to be away from the place of employment? The judge answered this in the negative, found the case fell outside the scope of the definition of employment, and dismissed the case. As explained by this court in Jump, employees who are where they're supposed to be, doing what they're supposed to be doing, are within the course of employment, whether on or off premises, except when they are commuting. This court went on to agree with the appellate division then, whether a petitioner worked on the road or from a specified site is not significant. Deviation was no different from the office worker who takes an afternoon break and crosses the street to pick up his personal mail at the local post office. Neither deviation would be compensable. Similar to the case at hand, whether petitioner is an on-premises or off-premises worker, routine travel to the employer's place of employment is not compensable. In the 44 years since the 1979 amendments, there has never been a published case finding such travel compensable. This was the legislative intent of the amendment. Otherwise, it would open up a kaleidoscope of new exceptions that Section 36 amendment was intended to stop. Section 36 establishes a bright line rule for the consistent application of the law, legislative intent, and judgment. Compulsion. The appellate division also hit upon compulsion under Lozano in an effort to cobble together a new exception to expand the statutory definition of employment. Lozano did not address Section 36, the statute. Rather, it addressed Section 7 and the issue of whether the phrase recreational or social activities encompasses activities compelled by the employer. Lozano is distinguishable as it involved an injury sustained during a go-kart ride that was compelled by the supervisor. This had nothing to do with the petitioner's masonry job activities that were completed for the day.
Counsel, I didn't want to interrupt your first 5 minutes. Before we get on to compulsion, I'd like to address with you, what are the elements here? And you began by saying there's a threshold element of proof required that the employee is required by the employer to be away from the place of employment. This is a statutory case. Do you have a copy of the statute in front of you?
I
have an extra if you don't. Want to come forward? I'll give you a clean copy.
I have a copy of it in front of me.
All right. Do you have a pen or a pencil?
I do.
I want to read through this with you and ask you to insert some numbers at different spots so that we can then go back and identify the precise elements that are relevant in this scenario here. It's, of course, the paragraph that begins with employment shall be deemed to commence.
Yes, this is the portion of the statute.
Just if I could, just to frame it, and I'll give you plenty of time to explain your position, but I wanted to set this out first. At the beginning, insert the number one. Employment shall be deemed to commence when an employee arrives at the employer's place of employment to report for work, and shall terminate when the employee leaves the employer's place of employment, excluding areas not under the control of the employer. So that's one, if you could. And that is then followed by a semicolon and the words provided, however. So let's insert the number two after however. When the employee is required by the employer to be away from the employer's place of employment, the employee shall be deemed to be in the course of employment when the employee is engaged in the direct performance of duties assigned or directed by the employer. And then there's another semicolon there, followed by the word but. Insert the number three at that spot. And it continues, the statute continues, the employment of employee paid travel time by an employer for time spent traveling to and from a job site, or, and let's insert the number four at that point, of any employee who utilizes an employer authorized vehicle shall commence and terminate with the time spent traveling to and from a job site or the authorized operation of a vehicle on business authorized by the employee. So depending on you on how you count, it appears the statute covers three or four different scenarios. The last scenario, numbered four, appears to be the one that applies here. And I see two elements for number four. Utilizing an employer-authorized vehicle and authorized operation of a vehicle on business authorized by the employer. Are there any other elements that apply to that particular scenario?
Where you're starting number four.
Yes.
What you phrase as number one is the foundational rule that was codified by the legislator.
But I'm asking you, are there any other elements that apply to this particular scenario? Because the statute is broken apart with semicolons. It doesn't, not every word applies to every scenario.
I understand. The other factor to consider is that this number four, employee who utilizes an employer authorized vehicle shall commence and terminate with the time spent traveling to and from a job site. It's talking about a job site there. That distinguishes from earlier in the statute where they're talking about the employer's location. Earlier in the statute, it talks about the employer's place of employment. So you see
that number one applies to this scenario?
This is what I'm saying. In number one, they talk about the employer's place of employment. And down here in number four, they're talking about job sites. So they're talking about accidents that are off premises where you're not going to the employer's place of employment. You're going somewhere else. So see, it specifically here, it talks about job site. So
number one says when the employee arrives at the employer's place of employment to report for work, right?
Right.
Are you saying that this employee was reporting for work at the employer's place of employment in this scenario?
I'm saying that the statute is trying to reduce the number of exceptions, so it's codifying what exceptions are allowed to this main underlying principle that the statute was trying to limit off-premises accidents. So when you're going to work or from work, it doesn't apply. And then when you're dealing with these other provisions, such as number four, they're not talking about traveling to the employer's place of employment. They're talking about traveling to job sites.
Actually, as the chief pointed out, four has two subsections: to a job site or the authorized operation of a vehicle on business authorized by the employer.
Yes, and this provision is read in conjunction with the earlier beginning of the statute that off-premises accidents are not compensable, because that was the problem to begin with, why they had to amend the statute, because there were so many different factual scenarios as to why accidents off-premises became within the scope of compensability that the legislator acted.
So if the employer says, I want you to drive from here to here for purposes of our official business, and an accident takes place during that travel, not compensable?
If that travel is from a job site to a job site, it's compensable, yes. If that travel is from traveling from your home to a place of employment is inherently beneficial to any employer. So that may be a condition.
It's not his actual place of employment, in that he is a he sprays customers' properties for termites and pest control, right? So he's not actually supposed to spray for termites and pest control in the employer's premises, correct?
Part of his job duties do require him to go to the premises and restock his vehicle on a weekly basis. So, for example,
but that's not where he's actually performing his work, correct? He doesn't work in HR. He's not working in a computer in IT in the back of the building. He's actually performing his work of spraying for termites and pests off premises, correct?
He does do a bulk of his employment off premises, but say the guy is at the office restocking his chemical, lifts the chemical. No one's going to disagree that he wasn't working at that point in time, lifting the chemicals to stock his truck. Well, there's nothing in the statute that requires a minimum time.
Sorry, you're saying he was working at that point or he was not?
Yes. For example, if he, say that morning he got to the employer's premises, he goes in, he picks up a bucket of chemicals to bring to his truck and hurts his back. We're all going to say that's compensable. No one's going to say it's not. He is working at that point in time.
Here he only had to go to get the chemicals on the employer's premises because the employer directed him, do not keep these in your car because they might freeze, they might boil if the weather is too hot, and they could be stolen.
That is a condition of his employment, but it doesn't change the fact that his routine travel from home to the shop is still excluded under the statutory definition of employment.
So what if instead of picking them up from the shop, there was a provision that every 5 days you had to go to Home Depot and buy this exact chemical? And he's on his way to Home Depot to buy the chemical. And the employer told him to do that. It's the exact same otherwise. Then what happens?
That is consistent with the legislative intent because he's not going to the employer's place of employment. He's going away from the employer's place of employment.
So here, this is just the accident that even though he's an off-premises employee who has to spray for termites and pests at other customers' premises, because the employer says you have to come here to get the chemicals first instead of going to Home Depot to get the chemicals first, that's why it's not covered.
Yes, that's why it's not covered, because of the statute looks to the employer's place of employment as the controlling factor to enforce the premises rule, and two, only allows the codified exceptions that are listed in the statute to then apply. But these all are the underlying theme of all of these is that they're away from the employer's place of employment, because the whole purpose of the statute was to limit off-premises accidents.
Can I just add to the facts here? Zumo directed that employees carry a limited quantity of supplies in their assigned vehicles. This petitioner, Heim, was told not to keep more than one container of a specific work product in his work assigned vehicle. Zumo instructed Keim to restock supplies in the morning, and all above policies required Keim to restock supplies at the shop. The appellate division concluded that Keim was engaged in services within the course and scope of his employment at the time of the accident, and he was performing duties that were expressly authorized and directed by his employer. And that's why they said it fell within the authorized operation of a business vehicle exception to the premises rule. Wouldn't we agree that in the morning, he couldn't go to the job site until he first restocked his supplies? He needed more pesticide and traps. So he was in direct performance of duties authorized by his employer at the time of the accident in an authorized vehicle, and not simply commuting to and from his place of employment. That's it.
The statute contemplates that travel to the employer's premises is not compensable. It's irrelevant that the employer asked him to go there in mornings to get the supplies as opposed to another time of the day. It's no different than anyone else's condition of employment, say a pharmaceutical rep.
That brings us to number two, the chief's second sentence. Provided, however, when the employee is required by the employer to be away from the employer's place of employment, the employee shall be deemed to be in the course of employment when the employee is engaged in the direct performance of duties assigned or directed by the employer. That's exactly what happened here.
However, the one sticking point is that the employer was not requiring him to be away from the employer's place of employment. He was going to the place of employment.
He has to be away from the place of employment. How's he going to apply the pesticides and traps? He's going to be somewhere else. But before he goes to that other place, he's got to go get his supplies.
Yes. And
he's doing it at the direction of his employer, Zumo.
Yes, that is all correct. However, the statute does not contemplate that type of routine travel is covered under the statute.
So what if he had been... Is it routine if it's not his regular place of work? I mean, would you agree that his place, plaintiff's place of work is not at the employer's premises? Because that is not where, as we've said, he can apply the pesticides.
Under the statute, his place of work is not relevant. What the legislator was focusing on is reducing off-premises accidents. So it's looking at the employer's place of employment as the controlling factor.
It seems like you're only looking at number one pursuant to the numbers that the chief asked us to apply to the statute in discussing this. So let me just ask, can you break down, so looking at this case and the facts of this case, help me understand what you believe is covered. So the employee leaves his home in the morning and drives to the employer's place of employment in order to pick up the materials that he needs in order to go to the job site. This was done on direction of Michael Zumo, correct? You're saying that is not covered because that's routine.
That's not covered because he was going to the place of employment.
So it's normally the case that, you know, being at the place of employment, coverage under workers' compensation terminates when the employee leaves the place of employment. In this scenario, the employee leaves the place of employment to head to the job site so he can do his job. Is that travel covered?
That would be covered, yes.
And while he's at the job site, he's covered because he's doing his work.
Yes, because the statute contemplates going from job site to job site. It also contemplates
So the only thing that isn't covered is going to the employee, the employer's place of employment where he does, where the employee does not work on a daily basis and was told to go, directed to go to by his employer because the employer did not want him to keep the chemicals overnight in his vehicle.
Yes, under the statutory definition, going to the place of employment, it doesn't matter if he's there for a minute or 10 minutes or all day long. Under the statute, the off-premises accident in those circumstances where he's going to the place of employment is not covered.
So what if the situation where the legislature contemplated that the employee is going to the place of employment because that's where they are working? That is their place of work.
The purpose of the statute was to limit off-site accidents. A person can be on an on-premises employee, an off-premises employee. It can be fluid. They can, when he is there sacking up his vehicle, he would be covered. When he leaves the employment location, going to a customer location, he would be covered. But the routine travel of him going from his home to the place of employment is specifically not permitted by the statute.
Is it routine travel when you're coming to pick up chemicals because your boss said you must, and assume those these facts, you must come and pick up the chemicals and not keep more than I've directed you? Is that routine travel, or is that different from just showing up at work as we did this morning by coming to this building?
That is routine travel. He does it on a weekly basis. He's going to the employer's place of employment. It's nothing like he's been directed to do something outside of his usual routine. That morning, he took the same route he takes every time he goes to the employer's location.
There's different locations he has to go to pick up the chemicals, right? It's not always the same location?
There's only one location to pick up the chemicals. There's only one shop.
Okay.
So I understood it. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
As I understood it, whether he returned to the shop to restock depended on how much pesticides and traps were left over in his truck and the next job site. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't done routinely. It depended on what was happening every week, depended on how much work he had to do and where he had to be. And his employer, like the chief said, you have to go to the shop if your supplies are insufficient. So it's not done routinely, it seems, is it?
The petitioner testified he goes to the shop 2 to 3 times a week. It's not
2 to 3, though.
2 to 3 times
a week. It's not every Friday.
It's not every Friday. It varies based upon he'll make the decision himself as to whatever he needs for that day and decide if he can go to his first stop or if he needs to stop at the shop.
Let me add on to the factual scenario Justice O'Shaughnessy just gave you. If in the middle of the day, while at a customer's home, one of the tanks malfunctions and he has to go back to the shop to refill or replenish or pick up a new tank, would that be covered if there was an accident from client's customer's home back to the shop?
At that point in time, he is at a job site, and travel from a job site would typically be covered. It's the routine travel that you don't necessarily need to use the word routine, but what the statute is talking about is travel to the employer's place of employment.
But what they're really trying to get at is commuting, right? So why, if he doesn't, he's not commuting because he doesn't work at the employer's place of employment. He works at the job site. He works at the customer's home. He works at the customer's business, wherever he's actually spraying the pesticides. Why does it matter if he has to fill up his chemicals in the middle of the day when they run out or before he goes in the morning? Because his employer told him, you cannot keep these chemicals in your car, you have to go fill up.
Because the legislator made a policy decision that travel to the employer's place of employment is not compensable from the petitioner's home from the start of the day.
Where in the statute does it say that, that it's only from petitioner's home at the start of the day?
You can derive that from the statute because it talks about, number one, it's talking about the employer's place of employment. The remainder of the statute is talking about away from the place of employment. It is when the assigned duties, first you have to address, are they required to be away? Then the assigned duties come into play. And then it goes on to number three, but the employment of employee paid travel time to and from a job site, again, talks about job site.
Keep going.
And then again, you authorized vehicle commence and terminate with the time spent traveling to and from a job site.
Or?
or, and that still doesn't mean.
Yeah, let's read the or.
Or authorized operation on a vehicle and business authorized by the employer.
Why is that not satisfied here when the boss says, you've got to come on a regular basis. We don't want these to sit in the car for too long. You must come to the office to get chemicals. Why is that not operation of a vehicle on business authorized by the employer?
Because this is read in conjunction with the requirement that they are required to be away from the place of employment. It's not a standalone provision. It's not to be seen in a vacuum. It should be considered with the whole statute and the legislative intent.
I understand, the point you just made. So the preliminary language under what I ask we label number two, you're saying applies to every part of the statute?
Yes.
Does it apply to one?
Yes. Oh, wait, one as your, I'm sorry, not my, not your, my any, one is different than your one. I apologize.
Wouldn't make any sense
no,
if you
it does not
it.
Apply to the what you designated as one. In my,
so you wouldn't,
in my argument, I designated what you two have as
so
one.
Again, just as a matter of pure statutory interpretation, so you wouldn't look back to the language before the semicolon where you have the phrase when the employer is required to be away from the employer's place of employment and apply it to one, but you do suggest we look back at the language in what I've labeled four and jump over that semicolon and apply it back to two.
Yes, because the language says provided however, and this provided however where the employees required to, by the employer to be away from the employer's location of employment is addressing the legislative intent to reduce off-site accidents.
So it's what, not I'm what I'm suggesting is that we read the statute, and it could have been written better, to be sure.
Could have been written better.
But if after that first semicolon it said, however, one, two, three, then we would look just at the elements within each one. We wouldn't jump back and forth, would we?
If you look at the statute, when the statute's not clear, we then go to the legislative intent. And in this case, the legislative intent is to reduce off-site accidents.
Are you also applying to what the chief had designated as number three? So number three is paid travel time.
Yes.
Are you also saying that there is only a such thing as paid travel time when the employee is required by the employer to be away from the employer's place of employment?
Yes, because they're traveling to and from a job site per the statute right there.
So the employer could not choose, I'm going to pay you to come to, this is someone who has a regular office job, but I'm going to pay you to come to the office in the morning and I'm going to pay you to commute on the way home at night. That would not count as employment of employee paid travel time?
Under the plain meaning here of the statute, typically when there is paid travel time, it's from a site to a site. It's not, I've never seen it from their home to their office.
So counsel, what do you make of the fact that in the record before us, the plaintiff started the clock at home and logged in and was on the iPad, logged in as working from the moment that he left his residence?
I disagree with that because of he, clocking in doesn't necessarily mean. There's been case law that said that clocking in doesn't trigger employment. What triggers employment is the statute, and they're talking about employment commencing on the premises when they arrive, or under these, what I say, or what you're numbering them differently, but I am saying that the exceptions to the premises rule is then codified after however, and they all require the worker to be away from the employer's premises to apply.
Didn't Mr. Zumo, though, testify that there were some days when the employee wouldn't actually know whether they had to go to all above's above all's premises to retrieve the necessary supplies until they logged into their iPad in the morning?
He did testify to that it could change. Sometimes they knew a week advance. Sometimes it did change. Sometimes it didn't change.
And in fact, two or three times a week, he never went to the employer's place of business.
And that travel would be covered going to the customer sites.
Understood, but he never went to the employer's, unlike this day. So that if he was going to go to the employer's place of business, he clocks in on his iPad. And he realizes halfway there, to the employees, he's got a malfunction in one of his tanks. And then he goes to the employer's, he's never been to a job site, he goes back to the employer's place of business. Is that covered? And he's in an accident.
If he's starting his day and going to the place of employment, under the statute, if he would not be covered. He would have
to. Okay, and that's the point I'm trying to make. Two or three times a week, he does not go to those premises where the employer's place of business to pick up chemicals because he's got enough chemicals. He looks, let's say, checks, clocks in, he's going to his employees to the site of the work. And either he realizes, oh my God, I don't have enough chemicals, and he goes back to the employer's premises and is involved in an accident, or he's going there, he realizes there's been a malfunction in a piece of equipment, and he goes to the employer's place of business to get chemicals or traps, and he's in an accident in either of those two circumstances. You're saying the statute does not cover the accident because he is on his way to the employer's place of business.
At the beginning of the day or the end of the day, typically, if you're going from...
This is the beginning of the day.
It would not be covered if you're going to the...
Neither of those circumstances that I just mentioned.
Under the statute, if you're traveling to the place of employment, it's not covered.
So if that happens...
If he was required to be away from the place of employment and from that place where he's required to go be away and goes there, arguably he could then be covered.
But if, however, he gets to that first site and he runs out of chemicals and he goes to the employer's place of business and fills up the tank and goes back, if the accident happens in the first period going to the premises, it's covered, and back to the premises where he's working, it's covered again.
It would not be covered in the morning, but once he goes to an employer location, then it would be covered. That's just how the statute reads, because the intent is to reduce the number of off-site accidents. It's not, I can understand that it could be frustrating, but there's a legislative intent here to try to reduce off-site accidents. So some off-site accidents will be covered if they meet what Your Honor phrased as 2, 3, and 4. Those are the codified exceptions that the legislature permitted to continue, because they were running into a problem where there were so many exceptions, the going and coming rule basically didn't exist anymore, because they would come up with different reasons as to why we should cover this one or not cover that one.
Isn't this circumstance atypical of what happens in a normal workday? This is somebody who drives a company car, his work is done off-site, is not in the employer's place of business during the day, frankly, virtually never there except to pick up his chemicals and traps. He's not the computer, he's not the going and coming employee that they're trying to deal with in the statute. This is a totally different circumstance.
The statute is not dealing so much specifically with the employee, they're dealing with the accident. They're dealing with whether the employer had control over this accident when it occurred.
I get that.
But why did the employer not have control here if the employer directed him specifically that morning, you have to come pick up more chemicals? And even though it would be much easier for you to just keep a month worth of chemical in your car, you are not allowed to do that because the chemical could get destroyed or it could get stolen. This morning, we told you, you have to come pick up more chemicals.
I don't think it's that narrow of an application of trying to say he was directed to do this. It was simply part of his job. He figured it out on a weekly basis, whether he had to go to the shop or not go to the shop. It was a policy, just like anyone else's condition of employment. An on-site employee.
How does that reconcile with the testimony from Mr. Zumo that there were days when employees would not know whether they would have to come into Above All's premises to retrieve the necessary supplies until they reviewed their assignments for the day on their iPads in the morning?
Right.
And the strict requirement that they not keep them in the car.
The employer was giving them the judgment call once they look at their job duties to decide if they needed to go to the shop or not. Mr. Zuma wasn't calling them up every morning telling them what to do. This was just a general policy of the employer that we'd like to have you pick up the chemicals in the morning as opposed to later in the day. Just like, say, there's construction workers and they need tools for their job, and their employer says, well, we want you to come to the shop first and pick up the tools to go do the construction jobs. They're not doing those construction site jobs at the shop, but they still have to go there and pick it up.
No, that would not be not covered.
That would not be covered.
They have to stop at the shop and get all of their tools before heading
when
to
they
the
start
site.
Out in the morning, go pick up the shop, the tools, and then go on. That would not be covered. Just like a lawyer going in the morning to pick up a file and then going on to court, that drive from home to the office would not be covered. When you go to court, sure, but not the drive there. Say there's a pharmaceutical rep and the company doesn't want them having so many pills carrying around. Well, you can only have so many, but then we need you to come to the office and then go on to your... There's a million different scenarios where this would open up exceptions to if the legislative intent is not applied.
And I will just clarify a point that Justice Wiener-Apter asked you earlier. You said, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounded like you said that if it was to go to Home Depot and get the items there, that that would be covered.
Yes, because the legislator drew a line in the sand saying, if you're going to the employer, it's not covered. If you're going away, it is covered.
So your argument hinges on the issue that the shop happens to be on premises.
The shop is the premises.
But if there was any other place that they would have to go to, some shed somewhere else.
And they're covered.
How do you reconcile what you're saying with the Jump case, where he was the sewage tree, whatever, the worker, the municipal worker?
In Jump, basically, what the court had said in that case was employees who are where they're supposed to be doing what they're supposed to be doing are covered in the course of employment, whether on or off premises, except when they're commuting. So first of all, they're contemplating that off-premises employees also commute. It's not just on-premises employees that commute. Then they go on to say, we agree that whether the petitioner worked on the road or from a specified site is not significant. Deviation was no different from the office worker who takes an afternoon break and crosses the street to pick up his personal mail. So basically, they're saying that it doesn't matter if you're an on-premises or off-premises employee here. If you're stopping to go get your mail and you're an off-premises, it's not compensable. If you're an on-premises employee and you go get your mail, it's not compensable. Just like in this case.
But that's when you're doing something that's not directed by your employer. But here, he wasn't stopping on an errand. He wasn't going to pick up his mail. He wasn't doing a personal business or even the dancing or the go-karting that the other two cases referred to. Instead, he's going to pick up chemical, which is what his employer told him to do.
Yeah,
and he's only doing it because his employer told him that morning, or I guess when he checked that morning, he saw, oh, this is a big premises that I have to go to. I don't have enough chemical to cover this warehouse that's 40,000 square feet.
And that's what Jump said on the same page from where you quoted before when they said, Section provides that they are to be compensated only for accidents occurring in the direct performance of their duty.
Then they are supposed to be where they are. I mean, that was the language in Jump I was trying to get to. When an employee is doing what they're supposed to be doing, where they're supposed to be doing it, they're compensated.
Yes, but in Jump, it also says, the statutory definition of employment is key to the elimination of employer's responsibility for accidents occurring in areas not under the control, unless the employee is required by the employer to be away from the employer's place of employment. In that event, the determining element of compensability rests upon the direct performance of duties assigned. So you don't get to that until they're required to be away from the place of employment. It's in Jump. Let me see what section it is. But Jump acknowledges that this first provision of being away from the place of employment must apply before you get to anything else.
Isn't the place of employment the job site in this case, and the shop is simply a separate location?
It is not, because of the statute defines the place of employment as the employer's place of employment. It doesn't look to the employee's place of employment. If it did, then it would say travel time to job site and the employer's place of employment. It doesn't have that in there. It distinguishes place of employment from job site because it's contemplating travel job site to job site, but it's not contemplating.
So if the employee was only going back to the employer's place of business once a month, is that routine enough for it to fall within your definition of him reporting to the employer's place of work?
Under the routine language comes from the old going and coming rule. The statute.
So you've said it many times today. He routinely goes every week. This is his place. We understand that that location is the employer's place of business. Is that where the employee is reporting to work on a daily basis?
That is not what the statute looks at. What it's looking at is this accident compensable. They're not looking at what is this job. Duties of the petitioner or the employed worker, because there are so many different fluid job duties out there. One day you may be an on-premises, maybe you'll be off, maybe you'll be hybrid, especially in the post-COVID world. There's a lot of people that work from home and maybe say, I don't go to the office anymore except for once a month. And I go to the office to meet with my partners and to have a meeting about our department. Is my drive now to my firm compensable? I would say no. A lot of us are working remotely and don't necessarily report even to a place of employment, but it's the employer's place of employment under the statute that is the compelling issue. That's the factor that you have to look at first. Are they going to a place of employment?
Home,
I'm sorry?
If your workplace is home and you have a separate obligation from what you do at home to go to an office where there's a firm meeting or some other kind of a meeting, you're saying that travel from the workplace, which is home, to the office where the meeting is taking place is not compensable.
I am saying that my workplace doesn't matter. What matters is the employer's place of employment, because the purpose is to reduce offsite accidents,
not
to limit that scope.
Not offsite accidents are eliminated. There are some that are covered, as you've already admitted.
Yes.
And the statute is remedial in nature to be broadly construed. So they're not trying to exclude everybody. They recognize that there are going to be incidents that don't fit the template of commuting. And they provide some of those exceptions. And then, as the chief pointed out, there's a more broad provision at the very end of the statute.
Yes, the remedial or liberal construction of the statute, though, does not apply when it flies in the face of the legislative intent of the amendment to the statute. The intent of this statute was to reduce off-premises accidents. And the way that they do that is if you reach the premises, you're covered. Then off-premises, if the employer requires you to be off-premises and you're fitting into one of these exceptions that are outlined in the statute, then you're covered. It codified the exceptions. It wouldn't make sense for them to just do a catch-all at the end of authorized vehicle on authorized business. That could mean just about anything. You have to read that in consideration of the legislative intent and the very first provision of the statute, which is saying accidents on premises is the controlling issue here. It's not what this employee's role was or a million other factors that you can come up with, because then you'll end up back at that kaleidoscope of exceptions that just keep coming and coming and coming. So you need to consider the application in conjunction with the legislative intent, that what they're looking at are where was the accident and not what the type of employee we were dealing with really here.
If we find the language of the statute clear, we should apply it. We don't then go and superimpose legislative intent. We do that if there's a lack of clarity.
Yes. That is fair, and I think that the provision should not be read in a vacuum, but you have to look at the entire definition of employment to get there.
Is there anything else you'd like to present?
Thank you. I just wanted to briefly touch upon compulsion. The appellate division also hit upon compulsion under the Lozano case in an effort to cobble together a new exception to the statutory definition of employment. Lozano did not address Section 36, rather it addressed Section 7, which deals with the issue of whether the phrase recreational or social activities fall into the scope of compensability if compelled by the employer. Lozano is distinguishable as it involved a go-kart accident that was compelled by his boss and unrelated to his masonry duties. So that's a totally different issue than what the question is here. In the case of Bar, Kime was not engaged in a social or recreational activity. Compulsion was improperly applied by the appellate division. The panel disregarded the fact that every time an employee sets out to work, it is at the direction and the compulsion of the employer. This would create far-reaching effects, bringing us back to the chaos predating the 1979 amendments. Travel to the place of employment is intrinsic to one's employment. However, it is statutorily excluded per Section 36. Respondent requests that the appellate division be reversed. and the dismissal be reinstated as the accident occurred outside the statutory mandated definition of employment.
Thank you, Ms. Passman.
Thank you.
All right, I'd like to start. We usually break it around 12:30. I don't expect to be done then. We'll see how far we get, and we may take a break in the middle of the argument. If you could. Let me ask you, as you approach, did you intend to use a full 30 minutes? I know you had requested that.
I don't know that I require the full 30 minutes. I requested it.
Let's see where it goes.
If someone offers you time, you take it.
That's why I asked.
May it please the court. The issue presented by this case, Your Honors, is whether the serious and significant injuries sustained by Henry Keim, an admittedly off-premises employee involved in a motor vehicle accident while operating his commercial work vehicle owned by his employer, were sustained in the course of employment as employment is defined by NJSA 34:15-36. I submit to you that it is covered by employment. You presented the statute that we are relying on here and broke it down into four parts, which is how I read it the first time I saw it. One of the most important portions that it seems that above all has missed in the statute, when reading the first portion of the statute, is that employment shall be deemed to commence when an employee arrives at the employer's place of employment to report for work. So that can't apply to Mr. Keim because Mr. Keim, Henry, does not report to work at the employer's place of business. That the only thing he does there is replenish his supplies. On July 16th of 2020, Henry got into his company-assigned van at his home. He logged into his company-assigned iPad to determine what his assignments were for the day. Every day, his assignments were different. And every day, as Michael Zumo testified, they could change. They could change from the night before. Granted, Mr. Keim, Henry, and the other technicians may have had a general idea of what they were going to do for the week and what they might have needed for the week, but it was not until they signed in that morning until they actually knew where they were going and what they had to do when they got there. And above all, directed that Henry and the other technicians take the company van home because it saved the company time, gas, tolls, and potential exposure on that vehicle. Additionally, if they had the necessary chemicals to perform their job obligations, they could go right to their first location, which was also for the benefit of the employer. After clocking into his iPad and determining that he didn't have the chemicals necessary, he had to head to Above All's location to get those chemicals. And it was Above All's policy that mandated that he go and pick up those chemicals at Above All's location, and that was based on what he needed that day. And it was also Above All's policy that he not be allowed to get those chemicals or the traps or anything else he might have needed for his day in order for him to do his work. He could only get those at Above All's location. And Above All had this policy because it wanted to reduce the amount of potential exposure of the chemicals themselves and exposure to weather and to theft. Again, this is at Above All's benefit. So Above All has the benefit of having its employees take the company van home. Above All did not give him the opportunity to drive his own car back and forth to Above All. Above All wanted to control that if he did have the appropriate chemicals or traps or supplies he needed in order to do his job for the day, he can go right there. It saves them time, gas, tolls, and expense. On the morning of July 16th of 2020, while on his way to the employer's warehouse to replenish the chemicals he needed, which he learned about that morning, he was involved in a serious motor vehicle accident in which he suffered injuries that required him to undergo brain surgery, lose a significant time from work, and pay a significant amount of medical expenses.
The respondent denied him those benefits, claiming that he was on a routine commute to his place of employment, and the judge of compensation agreed. But there was nothing routine about anything Mr. Keim had to do, not that day, not the day before, or not the week later. There was nothing routine about it. And the other thing about routine is, as we've looked at the statute and broken down into four parts, the word routine doesn't exist in the statute. What does exist in the statute is that in order for part one, as broken down earlier, in order for count or the portion one of the statute to apply, the employee has to be going to the employer's place of employment to report to work. Mr. Keim did not report to work at Above All's location. He didn't go there for meetings. He didn't go there to use a computer or do anything. He reported to work at his customers' locations. The appellate division, relying on the plain language of the statute, along with the case law, found that the facts of this case fell squarely within not the exception, but the definition of the authorized operation of a business vehicle, in that Henry was operating an authorized business vehicle on business not only authorized, but specifically directed by his employer. He was directed by his employer to check his iPad in the morning, open his iPad, and see where he had to go. This activity was specifically directed and controlled by the employer. While the workers' compensation statute, while the act is to be given a liberal interpretation to afford coverage, I don't know that we need to go that far, because the statute specifically provides that Henry, as an off-premises employee, is entitled to benefits. When we look at that fourth portion...
Does the statute specifically talk about the on-premises versus off-premises employees?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Where does the statute specifically distinguish between on-premises versus off-premises employees?
Well, I don't think that it uses those words in particular, but in the first portion of the statute, it talks about the place of employment where the employee reports for work. So the on-premises portion of the definition would be subsumed in that the first portion of the statute, whereas the off-premises employees are those that utilize the employer-authorized vehicle and that go to and from job sites.
Although, even though it doesn't use the word premises?
I'm sorry?
Even though it doesn't use the word premises, it does say, provided, however, this is our number two.
In number two?
When the employee is required by the employer to be away from the employer's place of employment, meaning off premises.
So, interesting, and I hope that I'm going to answer your question in what I'm about to say. In portion one and portion two, it mentions the place of employment. And I think that the portion two of the statute is characterized by case law as concerning the special mission. And that those cases are usually defining when an employee who is an on-premises employee is injured when he is off-premises. He's away from the place of employment. But interestingly enough, portions three and four of the statute don't talk about the place of employment at all. It talks about the employment and factor four, it starts with, but the employment of employee, no different than the beginning of the statute starts with employment shall be deemed. This is, but the employment of an employee who utilizes an employer authorized vehicle shall commence and terminate with the authorized operation of a vehicle on business authorized by the employer.
Meaning the authorized vehicle. They're not on premises. They're off premises.
They're off premises. Right. Yeah.
And you did say that the appellate division didn't conclude the facts fell within the authorized operation of a business vehicle exception. But I believe that's exactly what they did.
Well, I guess it's spinning words. When I'm talking about it in terms of an exception, it's more of a definition. And the statute itself specifically defines these types of employees. So to call it an exception really doesn't do it justice because it's more of a definition of of the travel time of an employee who is using or paid for his travel time, his or her travel time to and from a job site, as opposed to another employee who is utilizing an employer authorized vehicle on a business activity of the employer.
No matter how you want to characterize it, it's an exception to the premises rule.
Yes, and it's an exception to the premises rule, although according to the statute, it's just part of the statute. It's just part of the plain language of the statute.
Can you respond to Ms. Pasqua's argument that to read the statute this way would invite a broad expansion of its scope? It would cover drug representatives, construction workers who have to get tools, and myriad other employees. Are they currently compensated for accidents in the manner that we're discussing?
So if a person who works for a construction company is told, on your way to the construction site, you need to stop at the shop and pick up a box of nails because we are short one box of nails, that is absolutely covered because that employee is acting at the direction of the employer, no different than Henry, who was told that morning, this is what you need, or you need to go to this location, and Henry knows I need to go to that location with X amount of chemicals, or I'm not going to be able to satisfy my job. And his employer, his employer says to him, don't bring all that with you. No different than the construction worker's employer, the construction worker's boss saying, I don't want you to keep all those hammers and nails in the truck overnight because they could get stolen. Or I don't want you to keep that cement, that pre-mixed cement in the truck because it's going to freeze overnight. So if the employer is telling the employee, you need to go here to get this in order for you to do your job, that control, that direction brings it within the statute.
Is the scenario that we face in this case with respect to chemicals and how often they may or may not be needed the same as a construction company that says, look, all tools start and end the day in our place of employment, show up for work there?
So in one of the cases that I don't know that it's been cited here, in one of the cases where an employee has to go to a certain place to pick up his tools and his truck in order for him to do him or her to do his or her job, well, then that would be a commute. But in order for Mr. Keim to do his job, he might have been able to leave right where he was and go to his first job. So it's a bit of a different scenario.
We have a situation where the employer specifically says you can't take these items home. So he always has to start going to the shop for the most part, right?
I would find that to be problematic because the employer is telling him you need to take home the company van every night. So if he has to take the company van home, the reason why he's taking the company van home is for the benefit of the employer so that if he does have the chemicals or supplies he needs to go to that first location, he's allowed to do that. There would be no reason for him to take the company van home only to bring the company van back to get the chemicals. In that circumstance, the company doesn't have any benefit to making him drive the company van back and forth.
What about this short hypothetical? Let's say I'm a security company technician, and my job is to install very high-tech, sophisticated surveillance cameras at homes. And you're a customer of ours, and you want me to install those cameras in your home. And my company gives me an authorized vehicle to go all over the place. But they say to me, you know, these are $300, $400 cameras. We don't want them in your van, our van, that's parked in your driveway overnight. Every morning, if you have to install a very high-tech camera, as opposed to just putting in something else, you have to first come to our shop, get the camera, and then drive to your house. Is that covered?
I would submit that that would be covered because it's a direction of the employer. The employer is specifically saying, if this is what I want you to do, you need to do this. It's the control of the employer. It's the control of the employee over the employer.
So what about the example that Ms. Pasqua talked about, which is familiar to most young lawyers, which is you've got to cover, it's Friday morning, you've got to cover a motion, partner can't do it, so pick up the file, it's going to be left on your desk, and then go to court. Let's assume an authorized vehicle. Is that covered?
that would be covered because you're being instructed, the attorney in your example is being instructed, I want you to leave home and I want you to come to the office and pick this up. There's no place else that you could pick up that file.
So what if the attorney just was planning on being in court the next day but realized that they left part of the file in the office? Is that covered?
That's a little bit of a different situation, but in order for that employee to do their job, if they're being directed to handle that particular case and that file is in the office and they have to go to their office first, that would absolutely be covered.
So this would represent a pretty broad expansion of what might currently be the practice in workers' compensation court, couldn't it? If in fact those lawyer scenarios and the sort of analogs in other fields to that would be covered.
I think that the harder case is the attorney who decides on their own to pick up the file the next day. When the employer is directing the conduct as the employer directed here, then it would be covered under the statute.
But doesn't the employer always direct, let's say for an on-premises employee, isn't the employer still directing the conduct in that they tell the person they have to come to work every day?
They don't have any control over that person's commute to and from the office. So in other words, yes, you have to be there at 9 o'clock in the morning, but on the way to court, I could stop at the grocery store and wherever I wanted to. The employer is not controlling anything that I'm doing from the time I leave my house and getting to work.
Same is true in this case.
Same
is true in this case.
But
if your client had stopped at the 7-Eleven and purchased something, would that be compensable if the accident happened there?
Yes, because the only reason why the employee was headed in that direction would have been if he gets into the accident on his way into the office, if he gets into an accident on his way to his employer's location and he is using the authorized vehicle on. So in your scenario, if he decides that he is going to stop at the grocery store on the way to his office, then he has had a deviation. There's something personal about that trip that he stops and buys whatever he's buying at the grocery store.
Is that compensable?
If it's a personal stop, it's no different than jump.
Right. So then it's not, so it's not or it is?
So it would not be compensable, right? Because that would be a personal errand.
And that's why the language in the statute, in quote, engaged in the direct performance of duties assigned or directed by the employer, close quote, is important.
Yes, that's true, Your Honor.
Can you articulate for us, and I think the questions illustrate the breadth of this rule is beyond the scenario of this particular case that you're suggesting is of some concern. Can you articulate for us a principle that would include your client's case but would limit the scope of this rule so that perhaps every lawyer who ever forgot a file in the office or just decided, I'm not going to bother tonight, I'll pick it up tomorrow, is not going to suddenly, on their way to the office, or if an accident occurs, have it be compensable?
In the setting of the authorized business vehicle as well?
In the setting of the authorized business vehicle.
Well, while the purpose of the statute was to curtail the mass amounts of the going and coming rule, I don't think that the principle behind the act was transformed. I think that
My question wasn't clear. What I'm looking for is a limiting principle. In other words, a dividing line between cases that would be compensable in this category and those that would not be compensable that may perhaps limit the scope of the rule that you're suggesting and perhaps would exclude, for example, a situation where a lawyer simply decides to get a file on their way to court and it gets into an accident between their home and the law firm.
I'm sorry, Ron. Yes, I understand now. The bright line rule would be control. Here what we have is we have the employer controlling the employee's action.
Controlling by assigning or directing?
Assigning.
The performance of specific duties.
Yes. It's controlled by the employer as to where the employee is, what the employee is doing, what the employee is driving, why the employee is where the employee is.
Where do you find that in the statute? Are you specifically finding that now in number 2 instead of in the chief's numbering of the statute as number four, because number four doesn't really talk about control. As you mentioned, it just talks about business authorized by the employer. It doesn't say business controlled by the employer.
Well, the question posed was really, how can you provide us with guidance so that the floodgates don't open? And I think that the guidance provided is that the authorized operation of the vehicle and business authorized by the employer can be curtailed in the scenario where we're talking about, say, the attorney that decides, I'm going to go get the file in the morning. In other words, the decision in that respect is the employees, not the employers.
But my question is, where do you read that limiting principle into the statute? So are you asking us to read it not as on business authorized by the employer, but instead as on business controlled by the employer? Or are you now relying on number two, which does say when the employee is required by the employer to be away from the employer's place of employment, the employee shall be deemed in the course of employment when the employee is engaged in the direct performance of duties assigned or directed by the employer. That's the one that seems like it's talking about control.
Okay, so I think what I was trying to do was provide the court with a rule going forward. When an employee is operating an authorized vehicle, but is operating that. So let's look at the Chisholm case, and I apologize if I'm going off on a tangent. In the Chisholm case, the employee was operating an authorized vehicle, and that vehicle was being operated for a personal reason. The employer had no control over what the employee was doing at the time because the employee was going home to have dinner with her family and change her clothes before she got into the accident. So the court found that it was not compensable because it wasn't directed. The activity was personal.
And the personal errands are clearly out. There's no question about that. But what is it in the assuming that deciding to pick up a file in the morning instead of bringing it home the night before? It may be an option that's available to the employee. Does that distinguish your case from the lawyer case that was raised by your adversary, insofar as nobody has told that lawyer, don't keep files in your, you know, at home overnight because they might be stolen or something like that? In other words, if the employee has the option to do this a different way and bring the file home the night before and then go straight to court, Is that the distinguishing feature that might limit the rule that you're seeking?
Well, if the attorney employee is operating a business, is operating the business vehicle or the company owned vehicle, and is operating that vehicle on business authorized by the employer, and if the employer allows for the lawyer to pick up the files. It's up to you. You could pick up the files in the morning, or you could bring the file home with you at night and go right to court. Then that would fall within the fourth prong of the statute.
So the rule that you're proposing would include the lawyer who picks up the file in the morning.
Based on their own choice. Just based on the specific language in the statute, and when Your Honor had asked me about what distinguishes that and what distinguishes Kime clearly falls within the statute because everything he did was controlled by the employer, including taking the vehicle home and checking his iPad in the morning to see what assignments he had for the day, keeping a limited amount of chemicals in his vehicle that he might need, even though he might need additional vehicles, taking the vehicle home at night and parking it. And only going to the company's location for his chemicals. His circumstance clearly falls within the fourth category of the statute here.
So what if Chief.
What if he showed up for work and had five drums that he needed to take with him, arrived at the work site, and realized, oops, he forgot. He forgot two of them. He's required to pick them up on the first trip. Is the second trip, if the accident were to occur when he returned because of his mistake, also compensable?
Yes, because he is operating a company vehicle on business authorized by the employer. The fact that he may have made a mistake, I don't know that the Workers' Compensation Act would prevent him from coverage there.
Still in the course and scope of his employment.
Yes.
The vehicle provisions don't matter in that case, right?
That's correct.
So I had misunderstood then your answer to Justice Patterson's questioning about the lawyer who decides on her own to go into the office in the morning to get the file before they show up for the arbitration, DEP, or whatever. The way I thought you were arguing is that if you're using an authorized vehicle and you're on business authorized by the employer, and specifically that you're engaged in the direct performance of duties assigned or directed by the employer, then this is compensable. It's the performance of direct duties assigned or directed. If the law firm does not assign or direct you every morning, you have to come in for the file, and you go in for the file anyway. I thought your answer to the question about whether that was compensable is no, it's not, because even though the lawyer might be in a company authorized vehicle, and even though the lawyer might be on business authorized by the employer, that is preparing to take a deposition, the employee was not engaged in the direct performance of duties assigned or directed by the employer, because the employer said, you don't have to come in every morning for the file. So to me, I thought you were arguing that the most important words in the statute, as to what Justice Wainwright was talking about in the second section, are engaged in the direct performance of duties assigned or directed by the employer, like Kime.
The second portion of the statute, again, relates to, provided, however, when the employee is required by the employer to be away from the employer's place of employment. So that portion of the statute is also referring to a place of employment, whereas the third and fourth portions of the statute don't refer to the place of employment, because whereas here, Mr. Kime's place of employment is his truck. That's where he reports to work. So, and I think what I was trying...
Right, it's his truck, but not the locations where he's doing the pest control work?
I generally say he reports to work in his truck. In other words, he gets in his truck, he looks at his iPad, he makes a determination as to what he needs for where he needs to go. All of those, all of his work sites are separate sites where he conducts his activity. So using the attorney example, the attorney who goes from court to court to court to court, so if the attorney gets into an accident on the way to court, the attorney is within the scope of employment.